Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. When Sprint CEO Dan Hesse joined us a couple of weeks ago, he didn't say much about the anticipated merger of his company with T-Mobile. But the rumors are persisting, and today we'll look at mergers in general, and the one that could affect the Overland Park Company in particular. This hour we'll look at what it would take for a union of this size to pass federal muster, the impact it could have on the industry, and what it might mean for our local Sprint campus in Overland Park and all of its employees. With us today is Malaika Simmons. She teaches securities relations at UMKC and works closely with the Block School Institute of Entrepreneurship and Innovation. And Malaika, nice to have you. Welcome.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And also with us today is Dr. Nathan Mock. He's an assistant professor of finance at UMKC. And Nathan, nice to have you too. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, companies, Nathan, seek to merge. Why? I mean, what are the motivations that these often big companies have in looking at a merger?
Well, a lot of times, one of the big motives for mergers is growth. So when a company has reached its max ability to grow internally by developing new products or new services, they seek to combine with another firm that might give them those opportunities.
You know, go ahead, Nathan. No, go ahead.
I say some reason, probably more specific to this one, is sometimes merging allows you to gain scale and to gain size, and that can help everything from acquiring supplies more cheaply or just a general ability to better compete.
Yeah. You know, but like as you look at mergers from a 10,000 foot vantage point here, just in general, do most of them work? Do most of them not work? What do you tend to see across the board?
You know, it really varies.
Yeah.
Some of the and it varies how you're measuring it, because you can measure it from a financial standpoint of are the companies successful and doing well after the merger. But you also need to look at corporate culture. And a lot of times I think that's overlooked. If you're merging two companies that have vastly different corporate cultures, you may encounter problems down the line. So, you know, I think sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. I don't have a specific metric, but...
Yeah, okay. And on that point, that's a very good point. Let's get our listeners involved here early on today. We want to know what your experience was like if you've lived through a merger. How well did it work? How did it change your work experience? And if you could have overseen the merger yourself, what might have you have done differently? 816-235-2888 is our number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Dr. Nathan Mock, what is the difference between a merger and an acquisition? I mean, you frequently hear the two used together as a single department in some companies. So what's the basic point of separation here?
Sure. I think a lot of people use the terms interchangeably. I think generally people use merger to refer to a situation in which two firms that are relatively similar combine in what they usually call a merger of equals. And an acquisition is typically sort of one firm buying out another firm, and that firm just sort of ceases to exist as a separate entity and is combined with a bigger company.
So an acquisition tends to be a bigger company gobbling up a smaller company.
Typically, yeah. I think that's probably more typically the way that's used.
Malaika, who typically benefits, if anyone, from a merger? I mean, does it tend to be the shareholders, the customers, the employees? Who comes out ahead in these things?
The shareholders can definitely benefit with increased share price sometimes. The share price also, though, can go down once word of the merger comes out. And that's generally why it's kept hush-hush until all the parties are ready to really execute.
But if a merger is seen as a good idea by the company insiders, why would the stock drop?
Well, it may be seen as a good idea by company insiders given the position within their particular market. So
Right. They
may know that they need the extra capital on the balance sheet, or they may look to acquire. You may have, say, a vertical merger where an example of that would be if you have a pop company and they're doing a lot of work with the sugar producers. In the end, they say, well, it would just make more sense for us to own this entity instead of paying a separate entity. And so it may make more sense from a corporate perspective, but from an employee perspective, you know, the benefits remain to be seen.
So typically the shareholders tend to come out better than the employees. Can you say that as a general rule, or
say that as a general rule.
Yeah.
It really just depends for each merger and the circumstances of each. I think about some of the classic examples that we've had, you know, Time Warner and AOL. And initially that was, you know, hailed and folks were very excited about it. But if you looked afterwards, long term, the stock price tended to drop off a little bit. So
that's interesting. Again, we're talking about mergers today, and we're interested in knowing what your experience has been like if you've been through a merger. 816-235-2888 is our number here. Let's go to David from over in Lawrence. David, good morning.
Hey, how are you? I had a question about they're calling it inversion now, where a company merges with a foreign company. I believe the most recent one this past week was Medtronic merging with an Ireland company so they can take advantage of the low tax rate and essentially not have to pay corporate taxes or much less taxes, definitely not U.S. taxes. And I just wanted to see if your guests had any comments on that, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
David, thank you. And Malaika, I'm already hearing different adjectives to describe mergers here. You've used the term vertical merger. Our caller just mentioned inversion mergers. What on earth are these things?
Well, in terms of the term vertical merger versus a horizontal merger, that's really what the Department of Justice or the Federal Trade Commission looks at. A horizontal merger is commonly thought of as a merger among competitors. So with the telecommunications industry, you have Sprint and you have T-Mobile, and they're both competitors, but they're looking to combine.
Let's get to inversion mergers in just a moment. I have a caller here, Ross from KCK, who can't hold long. Again, our number here, 816-235-2888. We're looking for your experiences with mergers, if you've been through one. Did it work out for you or not? Ross from KCK, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you this
morning? Ross, thank you for calling.
Well, I am retired, but I survived the acquisition of a much larger company in 1986 by Ferrellgas, which is a large a local company.
Right.
And there was a great deal of management overhaul. There was a great deal of pain involved because Ferrell at the time was 65 locations, and they bought the company I worked for, Buckeye, from the Penn Central Corporation, which expanded them overnight to 600 or 400 in some locations.
Wow.
But they had a clear vision. They didn't know how to get there because, you know, it was reinventing the management procedures of a company that, in retrospect, and this was Buckeye, was not very well managed.
Huh. You mentioned pain, Ross. What was the pain involved with this particular merger between Ferrell and Buckeye?
Well, in the executive offices, there were a large number of layoffs. At the field locations, there was change in management philosophy involving driving the authority in the company down to a lower level, and that actually ping-ponged back and forth for several years, trying to find the best fix for that. And we never stood still.
Right. Ross, just quickly, tell me about your own experience in the merger. Did you come out better or worse off, or how did it play out for you?
Well, I actually, it came out better for me because I was able to, when I was in retail, to expand my opportunities by my, you know, becoming an entrepreneur within a bigger location.
Right. Ross, I appreciate you calling. I know you can't hang on long, but I appreciate your phone call. Nathan Mock, it sounds like for employees, a merger can be a heck of a crapshoot.
Yeah, I think I think it's a very nervy process. It's very uncertain when you combine. two different corporate philosophies, two different cultures. There's, you know, potential for layoffs and other things that I'm sure, you know, are on the employees' minds while these are going on.
So, Nathan, as Sprint and T-Mobile contemplate this merger so publicly the last few weeks, it goes without saying that a lot of folks out in Overland Park these days are a little bit nervous about what might transpire here.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a given, especially given that it looks like probably T-Mobile would kind of run the show. At least that seems to be the rumor at this point. And, of course, T-Mobile is not headquartered locally. They're headquartered in Washington. So there's always some concern when that's the case.
Washington State, I should point out, as opposed to
that's
Washington,
right.
D.C.
Yeah, Bellevue,
right.
Washington. That's correct. Yep.
Well, Malaika, I sort of cut you off. We were walking through vertical mergers, horizontal mergers, and our caller was asking about inversion mergers. Walk us through what an inversion merger here. I had no idea there were so many kinds. Yeah. Do you know?
Well,
you know?
I'm not as familiar with the inversion merger, but there seems to be a pattern of companies looking internationally to merge. And you see that again, you know, with the Sprint merger with T-Mobile, because T-Mobile's parent company is a German company. And of course, Sprint's parent mm-hmm. company, SoftBank, is a Japanese company. And this is one attempt, some have thought, of getting entry into the U.S. market.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times that's another purpose or use for the merger, too.
Is there one type of merger, Malaika, that is the most common type of merger?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
In addition to kind of the vertical and horizontal merger, you also can have it accomplished either through, say, a stock purchase agreement where the entities are buying the stock of one entity is buying the stock of another entity. Or they may have an asset purchase agreement where they end up buying the assets of the company. And that's done for a variety of reasons, but some of those reasons would include looking at liabilities as well as tax implications.
Okay, just a very broad question here. So when you look at merging T-Mobile and Sprint, just how complicated an arrangement might that be if, in fact, that thing goes through?
It would be extremely complicated.
Because
you have so many issues that are at play, and you also have a time sensitivity that is at work as well. So you've got tax issues. You've got a national company that has operations in all 50 states, so you would have local state law that would come into play, as well as federal law. And then you have issues such as, you know, the antitrust issues of whether or not you have a huge monopoly and the government, are they going to allow that to proceed, or are they going to have concerns about that?
And we're going to talk about that as we go through our
right.
hour here today. Yeah. And Nathan, I guess that's it's a money pit in a sense for the company. Lots of lawyers, lots of fees here, right?
A lot of fees. One fee that kind of stands out to me is, at least the rumor at this point, is if this deal doesn't go through, Sprint will owe T-Mobile between $1 billion or $2 billion in just the breakup fee. AT&T paid about a $6 billion breakup fee when their deal with T-Mobile ended up getting blocked. So that's just one slice of the various fees.
Wait. So, what is a breakup fee and why is there a breakup fee? There's no agreement right now. Why would someone have to pay somebody if it doesn't work out?
So usually when the companies start talking, there isn't always a breakup fee set up, but there has been in both of these both of the deals potentially involving T-Mobile. And basically, if for whatever reason the deal doesn't go through, so for instance, because there's nothing agreed on, Sprint could back out of this and say, never mind, I don't think this is in the best interest going forward. Well, that would not be probably good news for T-Mobile. So to potentially offset that cost, they have things like these breakup fees involved. And it's a real time sink for everybody involved. So if the deal ends up not getting done, typically you have to provide something. T-Mobile, if they backed out, would also owe Sprint, is my understanding as of now. But even if it's blocked due to regulators like the FCC,
right.
Sprint would still owe for that. So
And the theory there is they owe because if Sprint backs away from T-Mobile, you're hurting T-Mobile in a sense. So there's a responsibility there from Sprint to T-Mobile?
Yeah, I think mostly that these are in place to sort of provide some confidence that you're serious, almost like putting down earnest money.
I was just going to say,
or something like that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So we're not just fooling around here. We're serious. So if you back away, it's going to cost you something.
That's right.
Okay. Man, what a world. 816-235-2888 is our number here. We're talking about mergers in general and more specifically about the T-Mobile Sprint, much hyped, much rumored potential merger coming down the pike. Let's go back to some phone calls here. Lynn from Overland Park. Nice to have you, Lynn.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. I just wanted to underscore the comment that was briefly made at the beginning of the show about the differences in corporate culture. I was part of a much smaller company that was initially acquired by a very large public company. And then a few years later, we merged with another larger public company. And I was there for about 5 more years after that. And I think during that time, just the entire company, we spent a lot of time just trying to not only, you know, line up processes and things like that, but an incredible amount of time working on corporate culture differences, which were very, very different. And I think this company that I was part of originally went from a company with very high morale surveys and lots of employees who'd been there for many, many, many years. And that really has taken a turn for the worse, unfortunately, over time. And I think that this very distinct and very different corporate cultures has had a lot to do with that.
Wow. Lynn, how difficult was it to try to merge those two different corporate cultures? I mean, how did you go about trying to do that?
I think that initially we tried to more start with kind of the practical and line up processes and line up practices and make sure that we were sort of clearly doing things the same way, which truthfully I think was part of the mistake perhaps, and that we also, not which I think is probably fairly common, are different companies that were coming together were also in different locations. And there ended up being a lot of kind of us versus them and secret conversations happening behind closed doors about, you know, how to protect the people in this city versus how to protect people in that city.
Boy.
And so it became very adversarial and still remains a big challenge to try to get people to just play nicely.
Lynn, was there an attempt to bring the two companies together physically?
There's been a lot of discussion of that. And I think over time, the locations have had more mixing from one location to the other of different departments. So initially some of the departments were separated by location, and now some of the locations have, you know, the same department in multiple locations to try to help with that. But, you know, I think when you have a manager who's in one location that is sort of used to a certain direction, and then people, employees in another location, it's hard to get people to come alongside and kind of, you know, become a part of a different culture.
This is such a great call. I'm so glad you made the effort to call into the show, Lynn. What was the one thing the two companies did to help merge the cultures that perhaps was the most effective thing?
I think that probably the best thing we did, which took a while, honestly, was we finally started talking about it. Finally kind of acknowledging that things were really different and that meant things were going to be different. And I think that we initially tried to go along sort of pretending almost that it was going to be fine and everything was going to be the same. And I think that it helps just acknowledge that it's going to be different.
Yeah. Lynn, I'm so glad you called. Thank you so much for doing that. Malaika, what do you think?
I really appreciate your comments, Lynn.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
I think it's quite common that when you have two companies that merge, they look at the financials of how is this going to play out. But so often, what gets overlooked is the corporate culture, and it doesn't get addressed until, you know, down the line when issues arise. So,
you know, I can remember in my own lifetime, I haven't gone through a merger like Lynn just talked about. But, you know, back in the day in the early 90s, the Kansas City Star merged with the Kansas City Times, the morning paper merging with the afternoon paper. What was interesting about that was we were all in the same room. It was one newsroom, but two very distinct cultures had cropped up around the two different newspapers in the same newsroom. And that was a tricky proposition, even though we were under the same roof, being paid by the same people and, you know, working for the same folks.
Right. Right. It's hard because I think it's kind of the soft and fuzzies. It's the intangibles.
Yes.
And so it's hard to sometimes it's hard for management to put a name on it and realize we need to address this. This is just as important to the success of a merger as the financials and as some of the other tangible, more tangible items.
So the tendency, at least sometimes it sounds like, is for management to say we're worried about dollars and cents, we're looking at all the structural things, but the culture, the environment that people work in sometimes gets overlooked.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. And my personal experiences with colleagues and friends and even working on some mergers, I've seen that play out as well.
Nathan, chime in here. Does that all make sense to you?
Yeah, you know, the situation Lynn described is very common where you have typically bigger firm buys smaller firm. Usually the smaller firm is a little more entrepreneurial and you have a little more autonomy, and then the bigger company tends to be a lot of bureaucracy. And combining those two kind of operations is pretty typically painful.
And again, just looking at all this from the 10,000-foot vantage point, what you just described, Nathan, might very well apply to Sprint, the larger company, I think, than T-Mobile. Do I have that right?
They are relatively close in size. Okay. If you look at it in terms of number of customers, Sprint's probably a little bit bigger. Sprint's definitely number three, and T-Mobile's number four.
Right.
But they're within a stone's throw from each other. So,
yeah.
But they still have pretty clearly different cultures, at least kind of if you just look at the guys at the top. John Ledger's kind of a maverick, and
yes.
T-Mobile has a little bit different approach to how they approach wireless, and Dan Hesse's a little more traditional at Sprint. And I think there's some – just looking at the very very top spot, I think there's the potential for some differences there.
I was going to say, if you just look at the personalities of the CEOs, you're looking at two very different people, which might begin to spell the difficulties down the road if, in fact, this comes off.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
Yeah. Let's grab a couple more calls here. We're talking this morning about mergers, looking at the potential for a merger between T-Mobile and Sprint. Again, our number here, we're wondering what your experience has been. If you've been through one of these things, 816-235-2888. Scott from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I was involved in the GTE being bought out by Verizon.
Yes.
I worked for GTE, and, it was like, we worked in this office, we had our careers, and one day we were just given a pink slip, and our lives were never the same after that. You know, my wife and I, we lost our home, and the job that I had, it started because I had computer experience. When computers first came into offices, I was given the position of being the computer network guy, and for the years that I was there, computers started to like really gain importance in the offices, but I was strictly the GTE computer software guy, and so I knew their software while the rest of the world was going on. Verizon came in and just, eliminated about 70% of the staff just on a moment's notice, and just, I've never recuperated. You know?
And Scott, you were one of those folks who was let go. Is that why you wound up losing your home?
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah,
so... And I gather all this was extraordinarily painful. I can still hear it in your voice.
Yeah, it's just, you get into a company like... a utility company, and I was young at the time. My wife had just had a baby. We had our home, and it was like, I was making good enough money to where my wife didn't have to work in Southern California. I worked in Irvine, which is a high dollar area.
Yeah.
I drove a Cadillac. She had a Mercedes. Life was going really good, and it just was just flipped on end at a moment's notice. Just one day, the district manager came by and walked from office to office and gave us all separation notices, we heard that what it was they, GTE cut everybody's position because they wanted to look financially appealing
yeah.
at this merger. And they gave no it seemed like they didn't care about the years of service that we had put towards right. our careers. I mean, you know, I have no retirement now. I drive a truck, you know.
Mm. Scott, I'm really glad you called and know how sorry I am for what you've been through here. And I guess that's really one aspect of this, Malaika, that we haven't gotten into yet, which is there is a ruthless nature to all this. And folks like Scott pay an enormous price when these things can come down the pike.
Absolutely. And that's really, really unfortunate. I think a lot of times, particularly with public companies, again, the powers that be, the decision makers, are looking at, you know, increasing the stock, the amount of the stock, the price yeah. that's paid for the stock, and consideration to all else goes out the window. And it is unfortunate and unfair. And, you know, I think that hopefully you're dealing with companies that will have a little bit more heart and taken to consideration the full perspective.
You know, let me just say this about the hometown team here, the company I still work for, the Kansas City Star. You know, back in those days when they did merge the two newsrooms, I think there was a sense internally that they could have let people go in the course of that. And the company didn't, and they hung on to folks at that time anyway. And as a young reporter here in Kansas City, know that I really appreciated that at a time when they did show some heart and that could have gone easily the other way. Let's do this. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll turn to the regulatory side of all this and how likely is it the federal government would smile upon a potential T-Mobile-Sprint merger and what all the steps are going to be for those two companies to go through if all this comes down the pike. And David tweeted us this quick clarification of an inversion merger. He says, more specifically, an inversion merger is when a U.S. company buys a foreign company to move their headquarters overseas for tax purposes. Thanks to David for that. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking about mergers, talking about acquisitions with Malaika Simmons. She works closely with the Black School Institute of Entrepreneurship and teaches securities relations at UMKC. And Dr. Nathan Mock, who's an assistant professor of finance at UMKC. We're looking at all of this through the prism of a potential merger between Sprint and T-Mobile. Our number here again, 816-235-2888. Let's go to a call here. Might bring us into our next part of our conversation about federal oversight of big mergers like Sprint and T-Mobile. Florence from Kansas City, Kansas. Good morning.
Good morning, host and guest. I'm calling to ask the question, what are the federal regulations governing these mergers, and what is the basis for these regulations, and how it affects the consumer and the economic well-being of the country?
Well, Florence, you could just come in here and take over my job, because that's exactly what I was going to ask next. You are just taking the words out of my mouth.
I know that I heard that you were going to discuss that. I was a little ahead of the game. But I was listening to learn, and that question popped into my head. And when I called, they said they were going to discuss it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Florence. I appreciate it.
Okay,
so
bye.
So what are the federal regulations governing these mergers? When does the federal government weigh in, Malaika? Give us a sense of that.
Well, the government is concerned about monopolistic behavior. The government does not want power concentrated in the hands of a few.
Because?
Because it hurts the consumer. Higher prices can result. And so through time, really kind of started back in the 1890s with, you know, Rockefeller and Standard Oil, they've developed a series of laws that really try to curb that behavior. And they're kind of commonly, you know, the antitrust laws.
So that one person doesn't have a stranglehold on a vital commodity that everyone needs and can jack up prices and ruin people's lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so one of the common filings for a merger such as this would be the Hart-Scott-Rodino Act, and it's commonly known as the HRS filing. And companies will do pre-merger, they will make a filing with the Department of Justice or the Federal Trade Commission. And one of those agencies will then kind of look at the process and determine whether or not something needs to be addressed in the merger and whether or not it would eventually harm consumers.
I gather that hasn't happened. Those filings haven't occurred yet in anything regarding Sprint and T-Mobile because they haven't announced anything yet.
Correct.
Right?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. It hasn't occurred. But it would occur kind of when they announce that they're actually going to merge. That would be one of the steps in the process that they would want to address.
And the federal government's involvement here isn't triggered by the type of industry. It could be any industry that affects consumers in a significant way, it sounds like.
Correct. The act is federal. It is federal law. And so the federal government really has the power to address anything that's going to affect interstate commerce. And so if it's large enough, then they will come and step in. What's interesting to note, though, is that each of the states may also have some sort of antitrust legislation, and they would need to look into each of the jurisdictions to see whether or not they had to make filings there as well. So you've kind of got two parallel things going on because you've got federal law going on, but then you also potentially have state law.
And when you were saying before how these things can get complicated in a hurry, this is exactly what you're talking about. I can get a headache just thinking about this. Well, let's listen to what Dan Hesse had to say about all this. When he was here a couple of weeks ago, he offered a thought here on what combining these two companies, what it would offer the consumer. Let's listen to what Dan Hesse had to say.
What I will say is what I've been saying consistently for years, and I think that the wireless industry could become more competitive and would be better for consumers. If you had a third strong...
Three strong ones instead of what you have now.
Yeah, right now I think we have a duopoly of AT&T and Verizon, and then there's a huge gap in size, and there's Sprint and T-Mobile. And I think the big two would react more in a positive, competitive way for consumers if they had a strong, number three. So I think the structure of the industry could be better and more competitive and better for consumers if there was a third strong player rather than a very distant number three and number four.
Nathan Mock, Dan Hesse makes a compelling argument there. But at the same time, if you read the trade press about this potential merger, what you walk away with is a sense that most insiders, most analysts project and predict here that most likely the federal government would not approve this merger. How do you see it? How do you balance those what Dan had to say with what the industry insiders tend to say?
Well, this approval process will definitely be interesting to watch. AT&T tried to merge with T-Mobile in 2011, and that was blocked. And I just was reading something yesterday that the AT&T CEO said he'd be surprised if this got approved. And, his comment was that the response they got from the government was that moving from four to three is not a win for consumers. That is obviously the argument that Sprint and T-Mobile are probably going to make, is that it is good for consumers that they would merge. I think another kind of complicating factor in this is Sprint actually sued to block the AT&T T-Mobile merger and cited higher prices and less innovation when they did so. And now they're basically saying, but if we combine with T-Mobile, you'll get lower prices and more innovation. So.
But others are also saying, just to be clear here, Nathan, that unless this merger takes place, there's a good chance that either Sprint or T-Mobile might end up folding. And what good would that do consumers?
Yeah, it's a tough industry, and it's a costly industry because of all the network building that is pretty much constantly going on. And so there's some thought that combining the two and having more scale might allow them to take their network to more places, have faster networks, and be able to better compete.
So if you're a betting man, Nathan, you have a better crystal ball in something like this than me. What do you think is going to happen here if, in fact, the merger is announced?
Actually, I was kind of hoping you wouldn't ask me to make a bet.
Sorry about that.
It's very, very difficult to predict what's going to happen here. The AT&T, T-Mobile block in 2011 makes me think it's unlikely, but I know that the SoftBank CEO started to kind of run this by regulators quite some time ago, and he still moved forward with it, and that gives you some indication that he has that he has some hope. Whether or not that's well-founded or not, I think we'll have to wait and see. But the fact that it's developed to this point and a lot of banks have gotten involved to provide some cash for this deal, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see.
So Nathan, for you, bottom line is this is a very, very difficult call, it sounds like you're saying.
Yeah, I think it's pretty close to a coin flip.
Okay. Malaika Simmons, where's your coin coming down here?
You know, I've read several different things, one of which said that it had maybe a 10% chance of
I've seen the same things.
Passing, but of going through. But one thing that I thought was really interesting, so on our horizon, there's kind of three different big mergers going on. There's AT&T with DirecTV or Direct Satellite TV. There is the Time Warner merger. And then, of course, there's Sprint and T-Mobile. And all of these will have to undergo federal review. And from a political standpoint, there are some folks who say, well, the government's not going to nix all three. And the government's not going to approve all three. So you're probably going to have a sacrificial lamb in that group. And at least one or two will be approved. So,
oh, that's interesting. That's
given
really
those
interesting.
Three, you kind of have to think, okay, who is most likely to be the sacrificial lamb?
Would you have a guess on that?
You know, I thought what Nathan said about how Sprint tried to block the merger before, and it's kind of now they're taking the opposite side. You know, it may come back to hurt them. I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see how the government kind of does that dance. But I think we are going to see some politics at play a little
bit.
That's
interesting. Nathan Mock, I mean, how does the federal government's oversight work here? Does the federal government, you know, come down and on a sheet of paper say yes or no, you can merge or no, you can't? Or can the federal government say, yeah, you can merge, but we're going to put some restrictions on what you can do? Or what's the final bottom line sort of wind up looking like? What's the range of possibilities here? Nathan?
Well, you've got a few different groups at play here, in that you've got the Department of Justice, you've got the FCC.
All right.
And, you know, in the Sprint SoftBank deal with the foreign aspect, you also had CFIUS, which is the Committee for Foreign Investment in the United States, which is a subcommittee of the Treasury. And, you know, everybody sort of has a say. You know, I think they're sort of officially blocked in terms of, you know, one of those entities formally says no. But I think it's more typical. My memory of the AT&T T-Mobile deal, for instance, is I don't think that was ever formally blocked. I just think the FCC gave very strong statements that they would oppose that deal, and eventually AT&T just backed off. So I think a lot of times, sort of behind closed doors, people get the word on this ahead of time, and then they can choose to plow ahead and force a decision or not.
Well, if our listeners have an opinion here one way or the other, I'd like to hear it, because obviously we're hearing from our experts that this is going to be a very tough call. As we're talking this morning about mergers, we're talking about the potential merger between Sprint and T-Mobile. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. But like a Simmons, I mean, are there examples of mergers out there that, you know, didn't wind up passing federal merger muster, and those that did, that might be useful here?
Well, AT&T several years ago tried to acquire T-Mobile, and that didn't quite pass muster.
And what happened there?
The regulators, again, signaled that they weren't going to be in favor of it, and so AT&T stepped back from the deal.
So the recent history would suggest that this kind of thing might not go forward.
Correct. But then you have other industries where it does. Most recently, U.S. Airways and American Airlines. And the government had, again, some concerns, but there are some remedies that they will allow. So with the case of the airlines merging, the airlines had to agree to give up certain gates. And I think in LaGuardia and Chicago and D.C., they gave up some of the gates. So again, we are helping to restore competition back into the market. And so that can also be it can be a dance of sorts where the government says we have some concerns, but if you do these things, if you divest of certain assets or if you have certain licensing agreements, then we may go ahead and allow this to go forward.
So it was a qualified yes, in a sense. They did put stipulations on it and conditions on it then.
That's correct.
Okay. If Sprint and T-Mobile merge, which name will they most likely use, Nathan? What are you hearing about that?
What I've read is that T-Mobile is the most likely name to survive, and with maybe an outside chance of SoftBank USA or something like that. But I think Sprint surviving as a name seems unlikely based on what I've read.
Yeah, and does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think probably T-Mobile has probably has the brand that it makes more sense to align behind.
Yeah. Well, it's also been rumored that Dan Hesse will no longer be in charge. We talked a little bit about that. And John, how do you say his last name? Ledger? Okay.
Ledger, I believe, yeah.
Ledger, the CEO for T-Mobile, he might be the guy in charge. Again, Dan Hesse had a pretty calm observation about his tenure at Sprint. Here's what he had to say about that.
You know, I'm 60 years old. I've been working, in this job for,
almost 7 years.
Yeah, you know, almost 7 years, which is a long period of time for a CEO to be in one job.
And is 7 years a long time for a CEO to stay with one company, Malaika?
I think it can be, especially in today's, in this day and age. It's a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job. You are to some extent at the will of the board of directors and your stockholders, and you got to keep them happy. And it's, very complicated. So,
One thing that really came through to me, having spent an hour with Dan Hesse sitting in the chair you're sitting in right now, you did get a sense from that hour of just what he is up against. And you're right, that 24/7 sort of workload that he's under. You hear stories anecdotally about Dan. He shows up at a kid's sporting event and he'll watch the event for sure, but he's got his laptop with him and he's working, he's on the phone, he's doing what he's got to do. And the number of balls he has in the air as he works through not only this merger, but the high-def sound quality Sprint's working on right now, all those things, it sounded like he's got a whole lot on his plate.
Right. And it sounds even more with the merger talk, because, you've just got the regular, ordinary course of business. And when you have a company such as Sprint that's really an international company, that's a lot there. But then when you start looking at all of the potential issues if you're going to have a merger and dealing with that in addition to your regular, quote, day job,
yeah,
it is quite a lot.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Mark from Blue Springs. Mark, good morning to you.
Well, good morning to you. To me, I came in at the end of the tail end of this show, and so I'm wondering, how is price gouging defined, and how does that relate to antitrust to purchase? To me, it seems like that's the root of the whole question.
Price gouging, Malaika, how do you define it?
Well, I don't know that I have a specific definition for it. Maybe it's one that you know it when you see it, but I do think that is definitely a concern of the government. And when they are looking at these potential mergers, that is certainly one of the things that they look at is, how is the consumer going to be affected in regards to pricing down the line?
Mm-hmm. Mark,
how is that constitutional? Where does this fall under the Constitution?
In terms of price gouging, I don't know so much that there's the federal government feels that it has the parameters to look into this because of the Interstate Commerce Clause. And part of their job is that they are looking to make sure that the flow of commerce between the states is not impeded in any way. And so price gouging would impede that. And so that's kind of where they get the authority to look into prices and look into commerce would be the Commerce Clause of.
Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
I hope that helps.
Thank you.
You bet.
It did. Thanks.
Oh, good. Good.
Let's go back to Bill from Olathe. Bill, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about mergers. We're talking about the possibility of a merger between Sprint and T-Mobile. Good morning.
Yeah. How are you gentlemen doing? Thank you for taking my call. My question is real simple. back when AT&T was broken up by a judge, I know the antitrust ruling was used to break them up. And then since then, the guy, what's his name, who was the chief counsel for Sprint, he basically wrote a book that was a pin. You know that book, right? In that book, he basically said the Sprint wants more competition. They want less competition because more competition improves the quality of service and improves the applications available to consumer. So why would a Sprint and T-Mobile merger, number one, based just on pricing alone? We know that when there's less cell phone service available, the rates will go up, not go down. And then number two is, wouldn't that reduce the quality and the types of applications that are offered currently? Because I felt in the 90s that Sprint did a really good job of coming up with a lot of things that AT&T refused to do back in the 1980s. Yeah. And they were kind of forced to do it. But then Sprint came out and started doing not just Sprint, Verizon also. But yeah. That's my question. So one has to do with rates. The other one has to do with the fact that if you have less companies available offering cell phone service, wouldn't that reduce the quality of service further?
Yeah, okay. Nathan, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, absolutely. So the two points he raises are both excellent. One is price, and the other is sort of innovation. And I think what he described is what a lot of people look at and say, how is 3 better than 4 in terms of price or innovation? Aren't we better with more players rather than fewer players? And I think in terms of both price and innovation, and I think the counter to that from Sprint and T-Mobile is, well, we don't have the resources to truly compete with the big two. And if there was a legitimate third competitor, an equal competitor, then that could result in lower prices. I know the SoftBank CEO in particular has said he feels like if he could combine the two, he could wage a price war similar to what he's done in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's the case they have to make if they're going to try to get this approved.
You know, Malika, you talked a little bit ago about the politics involved here. The latest I've read about the thinking on the FCC, for what it's worth, is that the chairman, Tom Wheeler, has expressed his desire to keep 4 national carriers. But Democratic Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel, if I'm saying that right, believes Sprint and T-Mobile cannot survive on their own. She's indicated she'll keep an open mind on the deal and could very well end up voting with the 2 Republican commissioners to approve a merger. So if the FEC ends up with a majority vote in favor, the merger could be a done deal.
It could. And I think you'll probably see some concessions. I think you'll probably see some back and forth between the commission and the companies, and they'll ask for certain things, and you'll see the companies agree to do that to kind of pacify everyone, a compromise of sorts.
Mm-hmm. Back to some calls. Rick from Kansas City, Missouri. Rick, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the conversation. I think that a lot of mergers like this are done to benefit upper management. It's sold as a shareholder benefit, and yes, lots of times the stock does go up, especially in the short term. But then if you look at the track record, a lot of the CEOs cash out and basically make their bundle so they can retire. The Time Warner-AOL merger was a disaster for the companies. The Sprint-Nextel merger, which I think the CEO of Sprint at that time was reported to have made $6 million on that, at least in stock, was a disaster and considered one of the worst mergers in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think they're done to benefit upper management, and anytime you consolidate the industry, just think the competition we might have now if Nextel still existed, if we had 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 cell phone carriers instead of now we're going to be down to 3. And you can look to Europe and other places where there is more competition, better service, the rates are lower. And over here we say, oh, well, this is going to be great. We're going to have this great big shiny company.
Right.
And it's going to be great for customers and for shareholders. But that's the selling package, but it never actually turns out that way for either the customers or especially the employees of the company that get their pink slips.
Rick, thank you for those. And maybe on that note, Dr. Nathan Mock, I mean, if this merger comes about, what will it mean for it to have been successful?
Well, as kind of a finance guy, we usually keep score with stock price. We usually say Is a combined firm better off than the two firms would have been separately? And you know, to Rick's point and to some other points, what the research shows us is that most mergers are not successful. About 75% of all mergers fail to create shareholder value for the acquiring company. It's almost always good news for the selling company because buyers pay on average about a 35% premium, meaning they pay 35% more than the stock is trading at.
Yeah.
So that's obviously good news. So, you know, the way that we would judge it is to see that that stock price improved for the acquirer.
Yeah. We're going to have to leave our conversation there. We're out of time. But I want to thank Dr. Nathan Mock and Malaika Simmons, both from UMKC, for coming in and offering such great insights today on all of this and what it might mean for Sprint and T-Mobile. Thanks so much. Sure appreciate it.